come you masters of war. You that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind discs. I just don't want.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ray McGovern, a retired CIA officer turned political activist. He served under seven U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefing at the White House to many of them. He currently leads the Speaking Truth to Power section of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington. In 2003, he helped create Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity to expose the way intelligence was being falsified to justify war on Iraq, and his latest article at Consortium News is Pundit Tears for Petraeus' Fall. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ray McGovern.
Thank you, Ian.
And Ray, the Obama White House has actually had trouble establishing an intelligence team, starting with its first director of the National Intelligence Council, Ambassador Chaz Freeman, who was ousted on the first day on the job. And we're told that Petraeus was finally sort of settling into the job, and now he's gone. What's your sense of this, you know, this continual shuffle in terms of President Obama's ability to get a team together?
Well, I think each case, Ian, is sui generis here. Petraeus is indeed an exceptional case. What's really interesting these days is how not only establishment Washington in the officialdom, but the top pundits revealed themselves to have been smitten, as much smitten by Petraeus as his mistress or his ex-mistress. It's really quite remarkable. Everything that your previous interviewee said about the top military is true. There is a moral collapse. And Richard Meyer was not the only one. Now, I'm not talking about sexual indiscretions. I'm talking about knowing better and pursuing god-awful, feckless wars that deserve the label of really strange escapades. And Petraeus is smart enough to have known that the adventure in Iraq, and particularly the adventure in Afghanistan, was a fool's errand. Okay? Now, why do I say that? Well, here we have the famous strategist, right? And he has big ideas. Columnist David Ignatius ran several rings on chimes on this theme about how great a strategist and how he did great things. But you know what? If you forget the fundamentals, if you forget the fundamentals of an infantry officer, which we learned in the early 60s, maybe it was missing from the curriculum in West Point toward the later 60s, but, you know, there were certain things you took into account before you launched any kind of expedition, whether it was a squad attack or whether it was a division. Now, this sounds corny, but we were taught to memorize an estimate of the situation because it had five key points. What about the enemy? How many are there? Where are they? What kinds of weapons do they have? What kind of weather is there going to be? How about the terrain? Is it really true that if you flattened Afghanistan, you'd have a country as big as China? And last, but by no means least, lox. Okay, now I'm from New York, but I'm not talking about bagels and lox. I'm talking about lines of communication and supply. And for any second lieutenant, much less three-star general, to recommend that we ship tons of equipment and personnel from the West Coast to Karachi to be downloaded or offloaded on trains and trucks and taken up the length of Pakistan, which is not all very friendly territory, over the Hindu Kush into Afghanistan, and consider that you have reliable lines of communication, that is gross misfeasance. And Petraeus should have known that. And we could see what it's costing to put a gallon of gas in a Marine tank in Afghanistan, and we could see how vulnerable those lines are. In other words, you can't get there from here. not without being beholden to the Pakistanis, not without being cut off by the Pakistanis, as we were for several months. So what I'm saying here is that Petraeus was looking at his own advancement, and it's very clear that he does not deserve the wonderful, embellished reputation that he's earned. I'd like to add one more thing before I forget. There's all this talk about the surge, right? The famous surge in 2007, which is credited with turning the Iraq War around. Let me comment on that. Your previous interviewee said the surge was designed to get us out of Iraq. Wrong. And he should know better. I think he does know better. The surge was designed to let Bush and Cheney exit the scene without having lost a definitive war. In the fall of 2006, in September, General Casey, General Abizaid came back and testified before the Senate Armed Services Committee. And what they said was, please, we really appreciate your thought, but please don't send any more troops. For Pete's sake, if you send more troops, what's going to happen is the Iraqi generals and the Iraqi politicians will never get it through their head that they have to make deals, that they have to take over their own government and take responsibility. So please, whatever you do, no more troops. Now, what happens? Bush and Cheney go to the think tanks that they consort with, and they say, what happens if we don't send any more troops? And the answer is, you lose a war on your watch. That's why Bush called Bobby Gates out of mothballs and said, Bobby, we have a general who's willing to surge troops in there to prevent a loss. And the upshot of that was, Ian, very simple, okay? There were 33,000 more troops sent in around Baghdad, and those troops ensured that the city of Baghdad of 5 or 6 million people was turned from a predominantly Sunni city into a predominantly Shia city. Now, that took a lot. You can watch the satellite photographs, the lights going out in the Shia neighborhoods. It was ethnic cleansing by any stretch of the definition, and that's why after we lost almost 1,000 more people through the surge, that's why the battles went down a little, because the Shia and the Sunni were not living in close proximity anymore. The upshot of that, of course, is 4 million Iraqis displaced from their homes, 2 million in neighboring countries, and 2 million internal refugees. Now, that's not anything to be proud of. The reason we're not still there is because we were kicked out. And who has the predominant influence there? Well, Iran. So that was a fool's errand. Petraeus was part of that thing, and Petraeus turned a blind eye to a lot of things, including Iraqi-on-Iraqi torture. It was during the surge that famous attack by the Apache helicopter on the two Reuters correspondents and 10 other men, killing them in Baghdad. It was during the surge that was done. And all kinds of things like that were done, given the testimony of the people that came back from Iraq. They had the helicopter gunships. They were looking for targets, and so they found them. So in a direct sense here, we're talking about Bradley Manning, the fellow who apparently gave the WikiLeaks trove of information to Julian Assange, including this collateral murder video. Well, he did that because he witnessed personally the fact that young Iraqi students, his age, were writing critical things of Maliki and other leading Iraqi politicians. They were wrapped up and they were thrown in these jails where everyone knew that Iraqis were torturing these people. And thankfully, in my view, Bradley Manning had a conscience. And he went to his superiors. He said, you know, these kids, all they did was write a memo here or a term paper, for God's sake. They shouldn't be tortured. And he said, oh, shut up, go home, complete your tour. And his conscience wouldn't let him do that. So my point simply is that all kinds of abuses came along with this famous surge. And it did not reverse the tide of the battle. It just postponed our real sorrowful retreat out of that country when they told us we couldn't stay any longer. And look at it today. It's much worse. than when we invaded it. So Petraeus played a big role in that, and on Afghanistan, I just can't believe his reputation. What did he say when he came back and testified? He said, "Well, we're making progress, but it's fragile and it's reversible." And what we really need is a political deal. Now, Eikenberry, the ambassador there, who also was a former general, he told the president, "Ain't no way Karzai would be a decent partner in any of this." So the idea of building a government, much less a government in a box that they were going to put in Narja and in Kandahar, it was all a crock. And, you know, unless you say Petraeus is dumb, which I don't think he's dumb, you have to say that it was unconscionable, the way he threw these young boys from the inner city and from the small towns of our country into the fray for this surge, at which cost 1,000 extra U.S. troops. So the surge is a really, really bad myth that has been bruited about by the establishment here in Washington. I'm sorry to hear your previous speakers say that it was to get out of Iraq. No, it was to stay in Iraq until Bush and Cheney was safely out of Washington. That's what it was for.
Again, I'm speaking with Ray McGovern, retired CIA officer turned political activist. He served under 7 U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefings at the White House to many of them. Now, Ray, back to the CIA, and this was a job, of course, that in his testimony, Petraeus said he wanted. I mentioned that Chaz Freeman, who's one of the most talented, intelligent people in the U.S. government, I've spoken to him a number of times, and he's just one of the most exemplary people you could ever wish to have in a job. He got driven out of there on his first day by the Israeli lobby, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Brennan, who's an Emmy Noscree there at the White House, he was Tenet's right hand guy. Tenet himself was a PR flack. He wasn't a real intelligence officer. So pretty slim pickings. Is there ever going to be anybody of the stature of a Chaz Freeman that's a kind of Renaissance man with diplomatic and intelligence and language skills? He speaks Arabic and Chinese, for example. Anybody like that that's going to be tapped?
Well, that is my hope, of course. It's hard to know. What Obama needs to do, in my view, is to realize he's got a real mandate here. He doesn't have to pay attention to all the folks that he had to pay attention to during his first term. The election is won, and it was won decidedly. So he has the option, and particularly now, with the disappearance of Petraeus, you know, I think the White House was just as happy to see him go. You know, he created this sort of other power base there, which was very much in tune with the neoconservatives who were responsible for Iraq, responsible for lots of stuff that goes on there, and who were peopling the team of Romney. So without Petraeus there, there's what is absent is a great big rooter for the Israeli stand against Iran. And there's copious evidence of that, the most recent of which was on the 31st of January of this year, when the top intelligence officials presented the annual worldwide threat briefing to the Congress, General Clapper, or James Clapper now, the head of national intelligence, told it like it is. I was so proud. He said, "Yeah, as we've been saying for 5 years now, Iran has not decided yet to build a nuclear weapon." Whoa! That means they're not building a nuclear weapon in my English. Now, what did Petraeus say? Well, Iran is a existential threat to Israel. He said it twice. Now, why would he say that? Well, to curry favor with the neocons with whom he's so allied. Now, why is that supremely ironic? Well, it's supremely ironic because 1 week before he said that, he met with the head of Mossad, the Israeli intelligence organization, who said, you know, this existential threat, Iran's no existential threat to us. And he said that publicly.
Sure. Well, Ray, I'm afraid we're out of time. I mean, I'm sorry to do this, but...
No problem. Well, it's really interesting how these smitten pundits and writers and all think Petraeus was some sort of hero. When I, as you see in my article, I think the word charlatan is more appropriate.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Ray McGovern.
Most welcome.
Again, Ray McGovern, a retired CIA officer turned political activist. He served under seven U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefings at the White House for many of them. He has an article at Consortium News, Pundit Tears for Petraeus' Fall. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the newly formed Coalition of Syrian Opposition.